This is the 12 Songs of Christmas, today with Robert Earl Keen. My name is Alex Rawls, and the 12 Songs of Christmas is part of an effort on my part to understand the mixed reactions people have to Christmas music. I love it, and so I'm interested in why so many people don't. Yeah, I'm fascinated with how something can be so hated and loved at the same time. And because I think about it first as music, I'm always interested in the decisions people make, musicians make, and how it happens. But at the same time, I'm kind of aware that if I take Christmas out of the equation, I'm probably missing something too. Mm-hmm. So this podcast is an effort on my part to kind of dig into these questions and sort of unpack some of this stuff for myself and with any kind of luck for you. So today I'm here with Robert Earl Keen. Robert Earl Keen has 17 albums, and it just occurred to me, say that we were talking and I realized like some of those have only existed on CD. That you seems like if you go back 17 albums, they should have been on vinyl, but you know that the CD era now goes back far enough. That's not the case. Anyway, he is from Texas and has worked in the place where folk, country, rock, and sort of the counterculture all meet. That his songs tell the stories, those stories that reflect a clear sympathy for working class lives and the people who lead them. And Robert Earl Keen, thanks for joining me.
Hey, happy to be here, Alex. Thank you.
So, where are you from in Texas?
I'm originally from Houston, Texas.
What part?
Bel Air, which is in the middle of town. And I was born downtown at Herman Hospital, and then I lived in Bel Air till I was about 9 years old, and moved out to Sharpstown, which was kind of like the budding, you know, new subdivision, and now it's not so much budding anything. So, anyway, that's the story.
Okay, I grew up in Sharpstown.
You did?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, went to Pat Neff Elementary.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Pat Neff Elementary.
Yeah.
Over on the other side of Gessner.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh well, I ended up going to Sharpstown Junior High for 8th grade summer school, and. I went to 9th grade and right there, it's right across from Pat Neff, actually.
Yeah, I left.
It's too weird.
That is weird. So here's the thing I was thinking about that I, sort of in that sense of like unpacking stuff, is when you're thinking about Christmas music, I know as a kid that I connected, to Santa songs because, mm-hmm. I had an investment in Santa songs.
Sure.
If I believed that that could work out.
Absolutely.
But I also know that stuff like Let It Snow was sort of just as artificial as Santa songs. That everything, all the wintry songs,
yes,
meant nothing to me.
Yes.
What was your background with Christmas music as
well,
a kid?
Well, somewhat the same. And I mean, having similar backgrounds, as you well know, in Houston, I think it would snow maybe every 5 years for just a little while and maybe stick... I don't know, maybe stick a day, but not any longer. And the one that I point to, Alex, is I don't know what a chestnut looks like. I couldn't really pick one out for you today. And when I think about that, that's where I'm, the disconnect is actually with Christmas music and me. I just go, wait a minute, there are no chestnuts in Sharpstown, yeah. Texas, Yes.
Yeah, I'll tell you, part of the point of this activity for me, mm-hmm. is that going through and slowly realizing how many songs are really, mm-hmm. Have not only no relationship to my life growing up in Houston, but also they didn't have any relationship to people growing up in, growing up in the Northeast, mm-hmm. Sleigh Ride, mm-hmm. probably stopped being relevant in, probably the turn of the 20th century.
Yeah. If you listen to those songs and clearly listen to the lyric, they have some pretty archaic references.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So when you wrote, Merry Christmas from the Family, Mm-hmm. Were you thinking about writing a Christmas song?
I was not. I was writing a. For a record that was the record that I made after Bigger Piece of Sky. It was the record Gringo Honeymoon. And I was in Nashville at this little apartment and banging out songs. And just I was just there by myself, and I was just playing and playing and, you know, really barely doing anything but, you know, making a cup of coffee and a breakfast taco or something. And I just sat there day after day writing songs. And I got to a point where I was, you know, I wouldn't say I was burning out, but I definitely was suffering from some kind of writer's block. And it was in November. And I sat there and I thought, well, you know, that's okay because I've got the rest of November to write this, and then I've got December, and so, you know, I can be ready by the first of the year. The record was slated to start sometime early in the next year. And I thought, well, I've got all of December, and then I panicked, and I went, oh, no, nothing happens in December. Nothing, you can't get nothing done, which is always kind of frustrating for me because somehow I don't know, whatever. Maybe it was because I was born in the winter or something. I kind of come alive sometimes in the winter. So I just, like, get ready, and the end of the year comes around, and I'm, like, ready to go. And then, well, Christmas and whatever else is going on, and you've got to work through that, and I just totally panicked. And then when I got over my panic, I sat down and I thought, you know, just going exactly what I said before about chestnuts, I thought there's just, I don't even know what a chestnut is, you know? So I kind of strumming on the guitar, I thought, I'll just take a break here. I'm going to write my own Christmas song because I don't have one. I, you know, growing up in Houston, Texas, I really could not relate to the way that the standard, the traditional, the beautiful Christmas songs were written and sung. And I truly sat there and would strum and make up a line and laugh my ass off for like 5 minutes and think, oh, this is funny. And I'd like, oh, this is funny. And I was having the best time. I got kind of out of my funk about writing songs and being serious, you know, and I was just having a really great time. And I wrote the whole song relatively quickly. And, you know, at least by that end of that night, I had finished that song. And then the next day, I went back to writing songs for Gringo Honeymoon. And a few months later, when it really came around to making Gringo Honeymoon, I sat down with the producer, Gary Valetri, and played him some songs and, you know, had plenty of songs. And he said, well, do you have anything else? I said, no. Gary, I got this one wacky Christmas song, but I mean, it has nothing to do with anything what we're doing here. He says, well, play that one for me. So I played it, and he just, you know, really just lit up and just went, that's a song. And I went, oh, come on, no, really? He goes, no, that's a great song. And I just went, and at that point, I realized that was part of, you know, the magic of that song was it's like, it's kind of so weird and odd that people, you know, take to it. They pay attention to it. And they haven't heard anything like it in the world of Christmas music.
No, that's true. Let's hear a little bit of it
Mom
now.
Mom got drunk and Dad got drunk at our Christmas party. We were drinking champagne punch and homemade eggnog. Little sister brought her new boyfriend. He was a Mexican. We didn't know what to think of him. He sang Feliz Navidad, Feliz Navidad.
Man, I hadn't heard that in like 20 years. that version, I have not heard that.
Oh, really?
Not at all.
What do you hear? Hear when you sing it?
Well, no. What makes me smile because when I sat down to record this with the other guys, you know, we just go, hey, one, two, three, and I go, no, stop. this song does not go one, two, three, you know. It goes like this. And we had to start that song about, I don't know, half a dozen times to get to the point where it's that slow.
Wow.
And they, because they just didn't, they weren't going to do that. I mean, you just don't do that. So we, so they kept going, and I said, okay, listen, here's the thing. Think of it this way, all right? You had a huge Christmas Eve night, and it was the best one you ever had, and y'all drank up all the alcohol in the house, and you woke up the next morning on Christmas with the worst hangover you've ever had in your life. And all of a sudden, you just picked up a guitar and you started strumming, and that's what you got to think. Somehow that message got across to him, and that's how we ended up playing it that slowly.
Yeah, that's. I have to say, at one point, I was tapping it.
Yeah,
and it was really. It took me about three tries to actually tap that slow. It's hard to physically go that slow.
It is very hard. I know. And we don't do that on stage like that. I mean, you know, there's always stage tempo, which is at least 10% faster than a record a lot of times. But on that one, we're not even close. I'm going, oh no, we might need to revisit that song like that tempo. It's hilarious.
Yeah, no, that's pretty powerful. I mean, I mean, because the delivery is as much of that song as the words themselves.
Right, right, and it goes to that point about, like, you know, you woke up with the biggest hangover you've ever experienced in your life on Christmas morning, and that's how you're going to deliver this, because, you know, you're just making it one little millimeter at a time in this world, and that's what I was thinking.
So you start the. I think it's interesting. So you started writing it. Well, I mean, partly it's an exercise, but also partly sort of just as a joke. You're just right. Making yourself laugh,
right? Yeah. I've written, you know, quite a few songs over the years. Just to, you know, I enjoy just writing kind of a wacky song and enjoying that. One of the things about my point of view about songwriting is, I believe that almost anything is song worthy. So I can't write about that, because nobody writes about a chair. Nobody writes about a broken air conditioner. Why not?
Right.
You know? Yeah. So that's what I do, you know, and that's it. That's how it works.
Well, one of the things I think is really interesting about that is, you know, I've talked to a number of musicians who have also made Christmas music, and how often it's almost like the Christmas song is over here, and that it's not quite their thing, and that how often they either start off as something they do quickly, or something that was just kind of intended to be a, you know, sort of a Christmas card for the family or something like that,
right?
And then it ended up kind of finding a life, and the fact that, you know, this also, that, you know, sort of lives in a separate place. In your mind at the time, it lived in a separate place from the rest of your music.
Right. And it still does to some degree, in that I don't play that song from Easter to Labor Day. So I leave it alone at that period of time in the year.
Is there something about a Christmas song that is just... that? I mean, obviously the audience wants it the most in season. But is there something about a Christmas song that's like that just doesn't quite live in your portfolio in your mind?
Yeah, it's Christmas music is very seasonal. There's no doubt. I mean, and you can have your Christmas in July party and have all that fun, but in general, when you really, you know, the music and the weather and the hustle and the bustle and all that kind of thing, and those covers of those New Yorkers and those things all come together in one kind of package in my brain, and so they have to come together. It has to be part and parcel of the same thing, and so if you're playing it, you know, I don't know, in August and it's 100 degrees, it just doesn't have the impact.
Well, I'll tell you the reason I was asking the question, and maybe tell you a little bit of what I'm going for here. But even historically, like back, you know, 40s and 50s, when you had crooners and you know, they would be doing Christmas music.
Absolutely.
That part of the point at the time was that it was almost like the music was almost treated like a vacation from their catalog.
Right.
And that, you know, they're someone who they sing this kind of song.
Right.
And then they make the Christmas album that's these songs.
Mm-hmm.
and then they'll go back to the other thing afterwards. Mm-hmm. And and so these Christmas records and Christmas songs by, you know, by a lot of classic performers always existed in kind of a, you know, kind of a seasonal bubble, and that they could never quite put their, it's like they couldn't quite put their arms around these songs are also my songs,
mm-hmm.
as much as everything else I did.
Right.
Which I always found personally odd, because since in many cases, most of their songs were actually written by other people, so mm-hmm. all or none of their songs were their songs.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so I guess the question I'm kind of playing with is, do you think of it as part of your canon of songs in the same way that you think of other songs on Gringo Honeymoon, as much as you think of songs like Corpus Christi Bay? Is it, you know, sort of, does it live in your sort of body of work in the same way in your mind?
That's a legitimate question, because lyrically it does work in my body of work in the way that I think about how I write and what I put out there, and you know what sometimes some people would expect from me as far as writing a song. However, as far as like playing that song, it is much more tied to one thought, which basically is, these days, in the last 5 or 6 years, we've created a Christmas show that's just around that particular song. That's our anchor. And then the rest of it, we pick a theme. You know, one year we did It's a 70s Christmas. Last year we did Back to the Country, which is based on Neil Young's song, and everybody dresses up in costume, and we have a big set, and we spend part of the year building a set and all that, and putting all this together, and that is what has become part of the Christmas song now. When I think about that it's like I've really almost created a monster. It's like it has its own life all by itself, and it holds its own. It holds its own weight, and it also takes up a large chunk of my time. Yeah,
I love how that kind of project happens. Mm-hmm. thing that starts off as a joke turns out
right
to be the hardest work you put in all year long. Mm-hmm.
Well, sometimes there is that. Oh, okay. All right. What are we going to do? So, you know, but I think about it these days. I think about it all year, and people have such a great time at these shows that we have. It's also almost become almost a little bit of a different career, like my career in parentheses or something, you mm-hmm. know, is the Christmas shows, because there are people that, you know, they don't come see us any other time of the year. They show up at these Christmas shows, and they love them. And for instance, you know, the Christmas show that's in Austin, Texas, right now has been sold out for months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that stuff is just boom, it goes away. So they make a pilgrimage, or they make a tradition out of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I have to say, that's one of the things I always find really encouraging, is when people find ways to sort of invent new Christmas traditions mm-hmm. that, you know, like they say, like, you know, one time there was a, you know, chestnuts roasting mm-hmm. thing.
Right, sure.
Which has nothing to do with us. Right. Nothing to do with anybody in the
yeah,
South.
Right.
But you end up with people have, like, their Christmas tradition uh-huh. is uh-huh. your show.
Roasting a pig.
Exactly.
I don't do that. I just know that some people do that.
Which makes perfect sense.
Yes, right.
No, I started in 2006 or 2007. I started a caroling pub crawl.
Oh, nice.
And that we actually, friends and I, will start at one bar, and then mm-hmm. we'll start just literally walking into bars and restaurants and start singing to people. And we've had people give us the finger. We've had applause. we've been asked for encores. We've had people like struggle to ignore us.
Yes.
And it's like, you know, we're sort of my philosophy is we're going to bring Christmas to people whether they want it or not.
Right. Right.
And it's turned out to become a great thing, in that we've now got about, you know, 20 or so people who actively look forward to it. And the 1 year we couldn't get it together because our daughter was young and uh-huh. but not. Was kind of an in-between age where we couldn't move quickly, mm-hmm. but we also kind of couldn't move without her. It was like, okay, that we took a year off and had people like, where is this? Where is this? Mm-hmm. So, you know, that inventing, you know, the idea that we invent our own new traditions.
Yes.
I assume that to be, you know, that's one of those really positive signs, especially in a holiday that people so often worry sort of over commercialized.
Right, right, right. Which is that's refreshing in that way. In the case of Merry Christmas from the Family, the song itself, I've heard lots of different stories about how people like this song or deal with it. One of my favorites is I had a friend from Uvalde, Texas, say, "You know that song about the Christmas?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "That song is a picnic compared to my family." I said, "So you know, I get that kind of commentary." But you know, also there was a guy, I believe he's in Nashville. And he said, you know, he was an attorney, and he said, at our law firm, every year we start December 1st playing your song the first thing in the morning every year, and we do it all the way up to the Christmas party that we have, and then we take off. So,
that's great.
So you know, there's some people that have a tradition built around this song even, so that's kind of fun.
Well, it's got to be great to have a song of yours not just be a song that speaks to people, but a song that actually becomes parts of people's lives.
Yes, it's an active song, right?
Yeah.
The proactive song, yes.
So where did Happy Holidays Y'all come from?
That was one of those ones that I must say I'm a bit embarrassed to say, because I always think in terms of never repeat. You know, there's an Emerson quote about repetition is suicide, you know, for an artist and that sort of thing. And so I always, you know, I'm never going to repeat anything. And I truly had a record exec just pound me on it. Said, you got to have a follow up. You got to have a follow up. And I went, I don't want to follow up. I don't want. It'll just be a hidden track. Don't worry about it. Nobody will see it. I'm like. And so in the end, I relented and I wrote that. And I'd have to say I play that some these days in the Christmas show, and it holds together better than I thought it did. It's not quite as good as I probably didn't put enough heart into it, because I was like, you know, torn, like I'm not gonna do a second song. But you know, it holds together pretty well. And believe it or not, a lot of people sing along. So you know. Hey, great.
All right. Well, let's check that here.
There is a Barbie doll in the gravy boat up on Mom's TV set. An angel made of styrofoam holds Rita's cigarette. Santa waves an empty beer in his plastic hand. Christmas time again. You know the kids are in their sleeping bags with every kind of toy. And Ken and Kay have hit the hay and Dad's new lazy boy.
That's too much. That is a riot. That is totally a riot.
So, was your family anything like that?
Oh,
how real is that?
No, the whole thing is real. As a matter of fact, I had one cousin. I had a couple of people really mad. My mom, for instance. You know, my mom, sort of at the end of her life, called up my Uncle Joe, who's in that song, and said, "Uncle Joe, Robert's written the most horrible song." and Uncle Joe told me that after she passed away. So I'm like covered with this guilt about the song. I didn't mean to hurt her feelings, because my mom was always my biggest supporter and you know, I just loved her to death. And she just, and so I didn't know that it really, you know, got to her. But anyway, so that was, there was that part of that song. But everybody else in the song, they are people, and people know who they are. And I even have the couple of them that go, "I know that's me." And I go, "No, that is not you." They think it. They want to be it. You know, they're not the one, but they want to be
right.
That, you know. So anyway, it's all there.
Yeah. I have to admit, the first few times I heard it, I didn't connect to it, because it was at the same time that there were like rock bands like, you know, out of New Orleans, Dash Rip Rock, and there was Southern Culture on the Skids. Uh-huh. And, you know, a lot of bands who were sort of talking about sort of the, you know, the sort of Southern, you know, working class experience, all of which walked really close to the line of, you know, caricature and stereotype. And of course, then one day it was like, oh no, this is, you know, these are the people around around us. It's just, you know, and but at this, but I know there's a point when I worried, when I was like uncomfortable with this, as you know, this is the way the rest of the country, you know, we, you know, the way the rest of the country sees us, and of course the rest of the country does see us that way.
Welcome to reality, Alex.
But did you have a moment of wondering, like, do I want to, you know, can I go that broad? And
I never did. I write this stuff and I just put it out there. There's been a few really pointed songs that I've written over the years, and I was a little nervous about putting them out. But these songs, you know, these are all, you know, these are all in a good spirit. I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings, and actually, I was just trying to, you know, portray the Christmas that I grew up in. I mean, really and truly, this that Christmas, the Merry Christmas from the Family Christmas, is really a PG version. I mean, there's some really rough ones. There's one that we had a friend, a girl that had a prosthetic leg, and her leg caught on fire, and she took it off, and then it caught the tree on fire, right? And then my dad's going, somebody turn up the music and get this smoke out of the house. It's there. You know, it was like nobody, you know, nobody really just went nuts because, you know, somebody's like in distress. So we had all kinds of crazy Christmas experiences. And so that was just like that one I thought was really actually relatively tame.
Yeah. And the nice thing is, you know, the thing is, everybody's Christmas has some element of weirdness. Mm-hmm. My favorite was, still, we had, when I lived in Canada, that we had a fireplace, and so we'd fire for Christmas Day. And at one point, after sort of the Christmas, everything had been opened and we're all playing, my dad decided, well, you know, to get rid of the paper, just start throwing the paper in the fireplace and start burning it rather than, you know, throw it away. And then while the fire was going, he decided, well, might as well start burning the trash. And in the middle of it, we just suddenly we hear an explosion and just see, like fireballs coming out, and he'd gone back to the bathroom and had gotten a little garbage can out of the bathroom, and he'd forgotten, and he'd dumped an empty can of shaving cream into that, and so that lit up.
Fireballs firing into the room.
It's like, okay, and, you know, and first, fireballs for Christmas is probably about as entertainingly weird and cool as the burning prosthetic leg.
Right.
But also, it was, you had that moment of, why did it occur to you to just start suddenly burning all the trash in the house?
Yes, why would you do that? Well, I mean, I can understand why, because I think some people do that. Yeah. But things happen differently around Christmas, you know? Yeah. I mean, people sometimes behave even differently a little bit, you know? It's a high-level time. I mean, I wouldn't want to use the word high stress time. I would say it's just a high minded sort of time, and everything's going, you know, at the time. So I'd have to say that, you know, some things are bound to happen in that situation.
So the one Christmas song I wanted to play for you, because I know you do perform it live sometimes, and you mentioned it in Merry Christmas from the Family, is Feliz Navidad.
Yes.
What's your relationship to that song?
Well, of course, I mean, Jose Feliciano would be the one that I would go to, you know, as far as like listening to it. But it was, you know, it was a song that years and years ago, when I was really little, and we did kind of had the stereo, you know, the hi-fi on and the LPs going and stuff, you know. We had an LP of that, and it and played during Christmas time, you know, and then, you know, it was, as life went on, things devolved. But there was a period of time where it was much more, you know, 1963-ish around my house. And that was, you know, that was the Christmas that we had then.
Well, let's hear a little of that.
Felicidad, próspero año y felicidad.
So is it like an obligation in Texas that that is like sort of the Texas Christmas song?
I wouldn't call that so much a Texas Christmas song. It just was part of my Christmas. I would say this. When we play, particularly our Christmas show, and we'll say, we don't do the exact same thing every night ever, but say we end the show with that, we play Merry Christmas from the Family, end it, you know, on Feliz, you know, on this kind of suspended chord, and then Feliz Navidad, like that, yeah. Right? And go into it. And when we do that, I mean, I know it's show busy, right? Yeah. But I am certainly guilty of like doing show busy things because I like show business. So I, you know, all of a sudden when that hits it, I mean, everybody sings. So I think everybody knows that song.
Yeah. 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 We tried one year, somebody decided that when we were doing the pub crawl that we should sing that. Uh-huh. And we realized that without instruments, that gets thin really fast.
Well, you know, it's that rhythm. It's that, you know, it's that beat that's going on.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah.
Robert, I really appreciate your time. This has been excellent. I really appreciate the time to talk about this stuff.
I'm really glad to be able to talk about this because I certainly wanted to dispel a few myths about the song, and I also, you know, think that it's it keeps growing all the time as far as you know the way that we way we look at Christmas expands all the time. So it's good to stop and talk about it every once in a while.
And I got to say, you know, it's again the stress is biggest, but it's got to be gratifying to have made something that has insinuated itself into so many people's lives, not just into their head or not just into their, you know, their iPod or their listening habits, but it's actually become, you know, a part of the way they live their lives now.
It's a little strange for me sometimes, but I'm really happy. I'm really proud of the song, so I'm really glad about that.
Thanks to Robert Earl Keen for his time, and thanks to Tipitina's. We talked in the green room with the New Orleans Music Club, and you could hear his band conducting their sound check at points in our conversation. Robert will be on tour in America for most of the rest of this year, and you can check roberterlkeen.com to see where he'll be when. He'll be on tour on his own with fellow Texan Lyle Lovett and with George Strait in Las Vegas, where he'll play two sold-out shows December 7th and 8th. During our conversation, he talked about his Christmas show, and the dates have been announced for this year's Cosmic Cowboy Christmas tour. He'll play 6 shows in Texas, 1 in Oklahoma City, and 1 in Nashville at the Ryman Auditorium. Again, check his website for dates and tickets. You can find us at Facebook at 12 Songs of Christmas, and if you can, drop by and say hi. I'd love to hear from you. The internet's made to connect with people and create communities, so let's start one. If you like today's show, tell others who might like it too. And if you leave a review on iTunes, I'd appreciate it, as that helps others find 12 Songs as well. Our theme music is Dawn of the Cosmos by Ask Again. We'll finish with more from Jose Feliciano. Thanks for listening, and we'll do this again next week.